Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 226, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, and I am Chris Featherstone, your host. Live and living, Culligan, funky like a monkey, if you will. We are going to have some fun tonight, as we do every single week, every single Tuesday night. This is the place to be. Chart-breaking, episodic podcast of all things wrestling and scholarly input. This is the home for you as a listener. Thank you all the listeners who continue to support the show, and I am indebted to you all, and so thankful that you continue to make this show so popular as it is. I mean, this is good stuff, and I really, really appreciate it. Approaching 4.5 years in the business of podcasting, and ladies and gentlemen, I have just as much fun today as I did over 4 years ago. And reasons like bringing this person, our guest for this evening, bringing someone like him onto the show tonight, is the reason why I continue to love what I do. And the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, without further ado, introduce, all of a sudden, it didn't matter who he was. He had a last name that screamed heel, so people decided to boo him, and it worked, and it works well. Ladies and gentlemen, Arya Daivari, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How's the day been?
Day's been good. You know, got up early, got a good workout in, did some grocery shopping. So, you know, now that got a wrestle on TV, kind of got the bug to hit the gym extra hard.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you come from a background of, you know, your older brother's been a wrestler for a while now, and you live in a state that is overtly immersed with wrestling history. Was that an inspiration to become a wrestler, your brother and your Minnesota heritage, or was it something else, or did it just spawn on you? What inspired you to be a pro wrestler?
In all honesty, you know, I think a lot of people, the mistake they make is they assume because my brother was on TV a while ago that he must be an older guy. But my brother is actually one of the youngest contracted WWE stars ever. I think he was like 20 or 21. And so we really started watching wrestling when we were kids. And when we were kids, it was like 1997, 1998. So we actually grew up watching the Attitude Era, which was, you know, arguably the most popular time in wrestling that almost everybody was watching. And that's exactly when we got hooked. I believe he was 14 years old. I was 8 years old. And we were just hooked into it immediately. And not too long after that, he started training and became an independent wrestler by the time he was 17. Mm-hmm. So we got our main inspirations, I think, from that generation that inspired a lot of people. And that was during the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was your favorite Attitude Era wrestler?
You know, the funny thing is, I think about, like, I'm thinking back in my head, like, who was all over my, on, like, the walls of my bedroom, like, posters and stuff like that. And honestly, it was all of them. I remember it was like Triple H, Taker, Foley, Rock, and Austin, and then later on Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho as well too.
Nice, yeah. Is there a memorable match that you remember in the, or not necessarily match? You know, a match could be your answer, but even a memorable moment that you can recall from the Attitude Era.
I want to say the first Raw that I watched was, I think it was going into King of the Ring 98, and it had something to do with Austin and Kane. I think it was, I don't know, if you got like the blood dumped on him or something like that. But it was something around that time that was the first. Because funny enough, we were actually big WCW fans. We started watching that first.
Oh, nice.
And I eventually made our way over to watching WWF. And that was like one, that's like in my head, it's like burned in my head. It's like my first WWF, WWE memory. Which I know it sounds so recent for a lot of people, but like you said, like I was, I think 7 or 8 years old when that was on.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's so funny about that? You know, the Attitude Era seems far, but it seems recent. But if we, the heart of the Monday Night Wars is approaching 20 years. That's the crazy part of it. I mean, it's like, wow, 20 years ago. I mean, you know, 20 years ago to the month was the inception of the Hogan heel turn in the NWO. I mean, that's
right. Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Yeah, I mean, do you recall that moment? Where you do you remember what you were doing at that time?
I wasn't even a wrestling fan yet. When I started watching wrestling, the NWO was already formed.
Oh, so about a year later after that, huh?
Yeah. I'm talking like I said, when I talk about, yeah, I started watching wrestling when I was a kid, like. That's when I was a young kid. I was 7 or 8.
Yeah. Wow. So you said that you were a WCW fan back in 97. I was too. I was, I grew up in the 80s and I was a huge NWA fan. I liked WWE, WWF at the time. But I was NWA blood, man. So as far as WCW, what were some of the wrestlers that you remember just kind of emulating as a kid?
Oh, it was definitely Rey Mysterio. I specifically remember. We had the mask and stuff, and we had like a trampoline in our backyard, so we'd put the mask on and go do like backflips and stuff on the trampoline. Like, I don't know if it's just because like he's obviously a smaller guy, so the younger kid you can relate to that a little bit more. He just like I think as a little kid I was like, oh, he must be a kid too or something. Like, so it just made it that much. It just made it that much more fun. But I mean, you know, we painted our face like Sting, and we did all the stuff that I think all kids did around that time.
Yeah. That's very true there. So it's interesting because we talk about time, you know, time ago. As far as that was almost 20 years ago, you've been in the business for 10 years now, haven't you?
Yeah, around sometime this September is 10 years. I forget the date. I used to remember, but I forgot. Yeah, I started when I was 17. Around, I think it was like end of 2006, early 2007. So yeah, I was just thinking about it not too long ago. It kind of just like dawned in my head like a couple of months ago. But I was like, oh wow, it's almost 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah. So what made you like, okay, so you know, your brother's 6 or so years older than you. And, you know, 10 years ago, you know, he was really in the heat of, 06, I think it was around the time he was managing Kurt Angle and Mark Henry. The Mark Henry Kurt Angle time. About a year prior, a year or two prior was his most heated moment around the Muhammad Hassan. So what was it? I mean, what was that definitive moment that said, okay, well, I want to become a wrestler?
Honestly, my brother, I think he started in 1999. So mm-hmm. he was an independent wrestler from like 99 to, I want to say, 2004. And so when he was an independent wrestler, it was cool. Like, I guess none of us really fathomed that he'd ever make it to WWE. Like, I guess it's just not something we thought about. And I want to say it was 2001, WrestleMania 17. I remember that was the mm-hmm. – I was starting to get a little bit older, and then that's that – I remember the main event of Rockin' Austin was the first thing as like a kid that I was like really sucked into, like very emotionally as well too.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching like that's when like the obsession went like overboard, like over the top with wrestling.
Yeah.
And I think it was like a year or two after that. Like that's when like wrestling on the trampoline became like every single day thing. Like I think it was around that time I was like, oh, as soon as I can become a wrestler, I'm going to.
Yeah, yeah. 17 sticks out for me as one of my favorite. I think it was the greatest one of all time, personally. Emotionally, 3, I'm tied into WrestleMania 3, Hogan Andre, of course, but as far as just bell-to-bell, as far as just build, 17 is just a cut above the rest of me. So I totally agree with you as far as WrestleMania 17 being such a standout for anyone to be inspired to become a wrestler. And, of course, your brother doing it just added on to it for sure. So within these 10 years, who are some of the best people you can just kind of think about that you've worked with so far?
I mean, there's a lot of guys from Minnesota. Two guys that come to mind is one wrestler named Ryan Cruz. He's just a local Minnesota guy. And then one who's more well known as the Anarchist, Eric Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
He wrestled for like Dragon Gate USA and a few other places. He's probably, they're two of my favorite opponents here locally in Minnesota. But I mean, this is always a tough question because I have to sit back and like think of all the guys that I worked with. But like,
mm-hmm.
honestly, like you have good matches with the guys who you hear about who you know are good. Like, I wrestled with Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish and Michael Elgin. Like, they're all, everyone knows they're great wrestlers, so like we had great matches. Like they're a lot of fun. So I mean, so like I said, the guys that I think gel with really well. It's just, you know, it's going to be a night off. That's obviously, I think, all the dudes who I work with more regularly here in Minnesota, you know,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, Midwest area. But as far as more well-known names, like anyone who everyone already knows is a good wrestler. Like you're not going to have a bad match with them.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. And so with the 10 years and with the tenure, what was it, what was the moment that the WWE reached out to you and said you're one of the competitors for the Cruiserweight Classic? Who reached out to you and what was your feeling? Was it one of those things that, you know, I've been in the business 10 years and, you know, finally made, you know, got that big spot? How was your feeling, you know, with being selected? And who reached out to you?
Canyon Seaman was the guy who reached out to me. And
mm-hmm.
it was actually just it was a good feeling because I knew I accomplished it through hard work. I didn't just get emailed for this out of the blue. I've gone to do extra work anytime Raw comes to the Midwest or Minneapolis area. I always go do extra work. You get to do, like, tryout matches while you're there. So I think I've done that, like, 6 or 7 times. I wrestled a dark match, me and a local wrestler here. We tagged together in a handicap match against Great Khali. I did an NXT tryout. I was at the one that Kevin Owens was at and a few other guys. So I did the NXT. So like, I've been on their radar, and you know, I always showed up, and I kept kind of, you know, busting my ass and showing that I wanted this. And I think I always performed well, or at least good enough, that when they started thinking of guys for this tournament, they thought of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it definitely worked out for you. Now, what would you grade your overall your brother's overall run in the WWE? Now, he had some real high spots, and then he had some lower spots too. I interviewed him last year, and he, you know, he spoke about some things as far as that he wasn't very happy about, as far as some pitches that he was given. Or strongly suggested, and then his not, and the pitches that he had didn't really go too far. Now, just kind of a 20,000 foot view or 10,000 foot view of your brother's career in WWE, how would you critique it?
I thought it was great. So, I mean, anything he told you after the Muhammad Hassan stuff, like, he told you probably just as much as he tells me as well, too, so I don't know anything extra. And I read your article that you wrote, too. It was fantastic. But everything that was in that – everything I read in that article, he's told me that and nothing more. So I guess I don't know too much about it. But personally, when I go back and watch that stuff, you know, when I was watching it live, I wasn't a wrestler yet. I was still just a fan. And, you know, it's kind of different when you're watching your own brother. It's just exciting no matter what. But once I became a wrestler and I became a wrestler and learned the business a little bit more, I can go back and watch it and I appreciate it a lot more because they had some crazy heat. Like you don't see any heels getting booed like that today.
Oh yeah,
like,
exactly.
It was like deafening in the when they would come out or anytime my brother would talk in Farsi and like any time a babyface beat him up, the place would erupt in cheers and USA champions. It's crazy. So, like, and I always kind of dug that about pro wrestling. It's just why I kind of, you know, I really wanted to be a heel in this Cruiserweight Classic. I wanted to be a bad guy. That's what I feel like my role is as a professional wrestler. That's why I did it. So it definitely draws some inspiration from my brother.
Yeah, I mean, it was mirrored to Sergeant Slaughter in 1991. It was that type of heat. And, you know, that was over 10 years ago, and we really haven't got much. We haven't really had that heat from a wrestler since then with Daivari and Hassan. Vicky Guerrero elicits that type of heat, you know, but she doesn't play a wrestling, or she didn't play a wrestling role. So there hasn't been many selections of people that has elicited that much heat and that type of hatred, you know, of heat. You know, that's why kayfabe is so amazing to me, and that's why kayfabe should never die in pro wrestling, because it gets to the point where you're so attached to the character, whether you love them or you hate them, you love the journey that comes with the bad guy finally getting his, you know, that moment where he finally gets dethroned from some type of dominant status, or, you know, that baby face finally rising above the ashes and getting his, you know, his moment or her moment, you know, and I think that just continuing to hone that and for people to really understand the character is so important. So, unfortunately, you did lose to, I think it was Ho Ho Loon that you lost to, and which I was surprised when I saw that match because, I mean, Loon is good, but, you know, a lot of people knew you more than Loon, but it seemed like they were trying to attract the China audience. So was it just a one-time thing, or is there any type of hopes of getting called up to the main roster since Raw's having a Cruiserweight division now?
As far as I know, honestly, right now it just seems like a one-time thing. I don't know what their plans are. A lot of people assume they tell us like everything. You know, the Cruiserweight division being exclusive to Raw was a surprise to me. I didn't know that. They didn't tell us that. So they really just kind of tell you things as they go. So, you know, I would like to think or at least hope that at some point maybe I'll do something else. But as of right now, as far as my knowledge goes, it's just that one match.
Yeah, well, I definitely hope that you would have an opportunity to, you know, come back because, you know, it's so funny because that's the first time that you were on WWE television or network television on a role that you were highlighted, and you automatically elicit boos because the Daivari is attached to your name. And so that type of steam can be utilized to be such a prominent figure in the Cruiserweight division on the main roster. You can be, you know, you can bring that heel heat up to Raw because they need, you know, it's good to watch a good match. It's good to watch just, you know, bell to bell, spot after spot after spot. But, you know, you need those characters. And I think that in the Cruiserweight Classic, from what I've noticed, so far. Some great, excellent matches. But you were one of the people who really honed in the character aspect of it as well. So definitely hope to see you back in the WWE soon.
Thank you. I hope so as well, too.
Absolutely. So where can we find you?
I do have a Twitter. It's at Arya Daivari 411, ArryaDaivari 411. I know it's a mouthful and not the best one, but it's my first name, my last name, 411. That's my Twitter handle. Instagram, at Arya Daivari. I'm on Facebook as well, too. And then if any promoters want to book me for a show, it's Arya Daivari, the number one, at gmail.com as well, too.
Perfect. It's been a pleasure, Arya. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
All right, thanks.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free. On mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear, we taking this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God. Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Prizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nickin with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals. You and God for my defense in Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. This too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation's shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much to Arya Daivari for coming on the show tonight. Great interview, great crash course and nice little splash into his career. 10 years in the business, and definitely so much more to go. He's a really young guy, so he has so much more to go as far as his career. And having 10 years under his belt is a big deal. And it was, even if it was just one night, the very fact that, like I said, he's a Daivari, and Daivari has such a very popular lineage so far in the business, such a popular history in the business so far with his brother Sean. And what he's done in the WWE and TNA. It's really going to be interesting to see where Arya goes. He has the heel type of character already prepared, and that can just only get better. So thank you so much, Arya, for being on the show. Congratulations for your opportunity to be a member of the Cruiserweight Classic. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the guest host for this evening, none other than former Bleacher Report feature columnist and owner, webmaster of TJRWrestling.com. Ladies and gentlemen, John Canton, how are you tonight, sir?
Good, buddy. How are you? Thanks for inviting me on the show. I enjoyed the interview with Daivari there. And I like the end of those songs you had going, too. That was awesome.
You said what was awesome?
The NWO song that was playing before I came on. It was awesome.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's one of the two theme songs of the show. I appreciate it. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get into the headlines. Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the first headline of the night is just a recap of the Cruiserweight Classic before we get into the actual headlines. John, what is your takeaways from the Cruiserweight Classic last week?
I've enjoyed it. I'm writing the detailed reviews for it on TJWrestling.net, so it's been a lot of fun. The one thing I like about the matches on it is, you know how, like, you see a typical WWE match that goes 7 or 8 minutes, they might, like, throw in a headlock for, like, 3 minutes or whatever? When you watch these guys, they're going all out for 7 minutes. Like, they're making the most of the time, right? So it's been a lot of fun to see. Like, I like TJ Perkins. I've had a chance. I know him a little bit. He was on our radio show a couple of months ago. And, I mean, he showed so much personality and flair in his match. And I'm just really impressed by it.
Your audio is going in and out. You said who was on the show recently? Who was on your podcast?
TJ Perkins.
Oh, okay, yeah. TJ Perkins is one of the most, to me, he's one of the most popular names that's on the list of competitors just for, you know, his very, very popular indie work, and as far as playing Suicide and Manic as well. So, and it's, you know, TNA history. So, yeah, he's awesome. He did really good. I think that was probably the funnest match was him and DeMac. It was a very stylish, very character-driven match. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. The Max theme song was awesome. I think his character was awesome. And then TJ Perkins, he kind of was a bit different than what we saw in TNA. You know, he does a lot of indie work too, so he does a lot of stuff in the indies as far as his character, but. You know, as far as the TV is concerned, we're not used to seeing TJ Perkins with that type of swagger to him.
Well, that's the thing. When you're in WWE, and Devari was mentioning that too, you got to be a character. You know, you can't just be out there and be indie wrestler, you know, number one or whatever. You got to show that personality in order to stand out from the pack, right? And like you said, the Mac dancing and all that kind of stuff, his entrance and all that kind of stuff. And I think TJ did a good job of that too. And yeah, I enjoyed Mustafa Ali and the Dorado match. That was really fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Absolutely. That match was absolutely amazing. I was going to mention that as well. From a style, from a character standpoint, TJP and the Mac was good. But I think from bell to bell, Lince Dorado and Mustafa Ali was probably the best match of the night. It was absolutely amazing. And then Tozawa and Kenneth Johnson was good. But I think that I think that the people that were so big into was so much into Lince Dorado and Mustafa Ali that it was that match as a main event kind of was like the Chris Jericho and Triple H match at 18 after Rock and Hogan.
Yeah, that's true. yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, the company, I believe, they want to sign Akira Tozawa. He's a good performer, I think. But the match with Johnson was okay. And I think Daniel Bryan did a good job of trying to put over Kenneth Johnson, all the stuff that he overcame in his career and stuff like that. So it gave him more time than the other matches also. But it wasn't as good as the other matches, you're right. And, I mean, the one before, the week before with Ibushi, I think that was the best match of any so far.
Oh yeah, that match was awesome, and I'm a big, you know, a big fan of Cedric Alexander. He's been on the show before, and he was on my show a few weeks back to promote it, and he was talking about how he lost 20 to 25 pounds. He was told to lose 20 to 25 pounds to actually get into the Classic. He looks phenomenal compared to his days in ROH. I mean, he wasn't, you know, he didn't look horrible. But you can tell that he's definitely lean, way more lean than when he was in ROH. So it was, you know, such a drastic improvement in his physique, and just his athleticism is just really bar none.
I think Cedric Alexander is one of the 5 or 10 guys that will get signed after this for sure. I think Ibushi and Zack Sabre, like, I think that'll be the finals, probably Ibushi and Zack Sabre, but Cedric's really awesome. He's really come around the last couple of years, especially. He's improved in every area.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely, he is. All right, so to the headlines, Paul Heyman contract expires with the WWE. There's a bit of a holdup right now as far as the reason why there's no re-signing. It's been reported by many sources and many sites throughout that the holdup, one of the main reasons of the holdup is because Paul Heyman wants to endeavor in outside projects, including a new reality show, and the WWE is trying to, you know, be WWE and try to kind of, you know, strong arm people's contracts, and he wants a little bit more freedom, so there's a hold up. This shouldn't go into SummerSlam. He shouldn't accompany Brock Lesnar, but just with the new with the new information and the breaking news that we saw on Raw, with Brock Lesnar being there next week. I saw that. I said this on my Facebook Live last night. I'm posing this question to you. How is it going to be with Brock Lesnar? Because they're not advertising Heyman at all. So it seems as if they're just going to give Brock Lesnar a mic, have him be in the middle of the ring, and I'm not expecting him to say anything above the standard of Paul, say something stupid.
I think Paul's going to be there. I think they probably had some verbal agreement in place or whatever, or something like a per appearance kind of deal. Like, maybe Paul's like, okay, just pay me when Brock's on, you know? Just pay me, you know, when Brock is in appearance, pay me X amount of dollars, that kind of thing. And I think they have such a relationship over the years that they could probably work something out. And it was noticeable, too, that they did have feature Heyman in some video packages last week, I believe. So I think they gotta have him around. I mean, you can't just stick Lesnar out there by himself. Like you said, he's not a great talker or anything like that. Unless you have him stay in the ring, you feed social outcast members to him, like Chris Axel and Bo Dallas or whatever. But other than that, I just don't know what they can really do without him in there to kind of talk up Lesnar.
Yeah. Yeah, he has to be. He has to be there. There's no doubt about it. The next headline, Kevin Nash has interest in returning to the WWE as Dolph Ziggler's muscle. Thumbs up or thumbs down on your opinion?
I'm not a huge Nash fan, to be honest. And I don't blame him for wanting to be on television because, hey, he's 55 years old or whatever he is. And he's still in good shape, obviously. I mean, I've seen pictures and he's been in movies and stuff like that. But I don't see why WWE would be interested in doing that. But I think it's a good point that Ziggler needs something. And granted, Ziggler had a good night on SmackDown. We'll get to that later, probably. But I think like Ziggler always kind of needed it to be like the HBK and have a Diesel in there. Really, he had somebody. He had women managers and stuff like that. But like AJ Lee and Vicky, and they stuck Big E with them for a bit. But he never really had that big bodyguard type. So I think Nash has a point that Ziggler could use something to get over the hump. But
yeah.
I don't see it happening now.
No, I don't. And just, you know, Kevin Nash is, you know, he is inundated with quad jokes. And, you know, you never know about that quad, you know, in any moment it's susceptible to tear. But, yeah, I you know, he's at the point now that, you know, he wouldn't really be an intimidating force, you know. Back in the Diesel days, it was great. He was awesome, you know, to Shawn Michaels. The funny thing is, you know, Dolph Ziggler is 36 years old now, so it's one of those things that if you wanted to do this, you're about 10 years too late.
Yeah. If Nash was in his 50s, he could have done it, but I mean, he's in his 50s also. And it's like you said, Ziggler's at a point in his career, he doesn't really need it, too. So I hope he'd have it.
Yep. Brock Lesnar not receiving any fines from UFC, nor is he getting suspended from the WWE for violating drug tests. And, of course, you know, like I said, you know, the WWE revealed last night on Raw that he's actually going to appear next week on the show. So do you think this is a double standard for the WWE?
Well, he didn't fail their drug test, and apparently I don't know if you saw this, it came out on TMZ this evening, late this evening. They said, they have a quote from the police saying part-timers don't get tested like in the wellness policy. So maybe Lesnar's never been tested by them. And I guess that means Triple H doesn't get tested, right? I'm not insinuating anything, but honestly, if those guys do something, why would we care? Like, who cares, right? Like, you know, the thing about pro wrestling is, it's like, we want to call it sports, we want to call it entertainment, we don't really know where to file it in as either of them. But it's like, you know, if Sylvester Stallone takes steroids to get big for Rocky, how is it much different than Hulk Hogan doing it, you know?
So, I don't know. I think, you know, I'm a PR. My undergrad's in PR, man. And I just think, you know, and I got that, just that PR blood in me. And when I think about stuff like that, man, I'm not a big fan of it. You know, it's one of those things that it just doesn't make the WWE look good. If you're, first of all, you come from the heels of suspending your top guy for 30 days to the fact that you stripped him from the title, you know, and it's like you suspend your top guy for 30 days for, you know, reportedly is it was I think it was like something like an antidepressant or something like that or something.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it's a psychological, you know, help, you know, as far as what Reigns was popped for. And, you know, there's some reports on what Lesnar was popped for, but it definitely wasn't an antidepressant. And so I just don't think it's a good look from an image of the WWE, from making sure, because you have to understand from a morale standpoint, you have this year alone, you have someone being suspended for 60 days for grabbing Vince McMahon's arm. You have someone suspended for 30 days, you know, for getting popped for a wellness policy, which is Adam Rose. You have Roman Reigns also getting suspended for 30 days for a wellness policy. So you have these, and you have Victor getting or Connor getting suspended for 30 days for a well, I think his was 60, if I'm not mistaken.
60, yeah.
So you have these, you have all of these suspensions this year for wellness policy and for just a morale killer, or just, you know what I mean? And you have all these things, and you're trying to enforce all these things, but you have Brock Lesnar, who was tested positive for violating, you know, the UFC's drug policy, and so for some reason that, like, admittedly he was tested positive, and for some reason the WWE is taking that as, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, you know, eyes closed, you know, mouth shut, you know, ears, you know, covered type of mentality towards it. I think it just kind of lowers the morale of the WWE locker room, saying, okay, well, you know, I'm getting popped, I'm getting violated and suspended and fined for this stuff. But you have someone, you know, of course, on the caliber of Brock Lesnar. But here's my question to you. Do you think that, you know, if Brock Lesnar was outside of SummerSlam, and I understand that, you know, he's not even on TV enough, that his 30 days really wouldn't make a difference for him, because even if he gets suspended for 30 days after SummerSlam, he would have been gone for 30 days anyways.
Yeah.
So what should the WWE do in this case?
Well, I think you brought up some good points, and I'm taking an attitude of their side of it. It's just that, you know, we didn't test him. He didn't fail our test, so why should we suspend him, right? That's their side of it. And like you said, though, the PR thing is, like, you can't avoid it. Like, it's all over the news. Like, it's funny how it's like ESPN, those segments with WWE people, you know, they can also report Brock Lesnar being, you know, suspended for this kind of stuff, and WWE will ignore it. And it's just like, they didn't have Randy Orton take a shot at it at Battleground, so that was kind of interesting. I think from WWE's perspective, they're just going to, like, you know, we need Brock Lesnar to sell SummerSlam tickets. We're advertising. We're not going to take it off. He didn't fail a drug test for us, so we're not going to suspend him. And I think, I can see the other side of it, but I can see what you're saying, too, that it does send a bad message to the rest of the company. Because it's like, because the guys in the mid-card or whatever are going to be like, well, if I fail a test, I'm going to be suspended and lose my job. And if Brock gets, you know, suspended by UFC, who has, you know, different testing policy and everything, then the company won't punish him at all. So it's just kind of, you know, the whole thing's kind of funny. After that UFC 200 fight, I mean, they were celebrating it like our guy won, you know, like it was like a huge thing. I mean, now it's just like a black cloud over it. It was just like shit. I mean, damn, we wish that didn't happen, right? So.
Yeah, you know, and here's the problem with that. Even with that, you know, it's, you know, back in about 10 years ago, we encountered, you know, something similar to this with the whole Signature Pharmacy, you know, incident.
Yeah.
And Signature Pharmacy had nothing to do with the WWE. You know, they weren't a third party, you know, company for the WWE or anything like that. You know, there was a list of names who prescribed drugs from Signature Pharmacy. And as a result, you know, people like Chavo Guerrero and Mr. Kennedy, Randy Orton, you know, those top, John Morrison was another person. Those top names were suspended, you know, William Regal. And those names were suspended for prescribing, you know, drugs from Signature Pharmacy. So that was an outside incident, you know, that was away from the WWE and top names. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying you're right. I believe was it Sports Illustrated that did a report on it? Was that right?
What's that?
Was it Sports Illustrated that leaked the Signature Pharmacy names?
Yep.
And that's how it got the news.
Yep, that's how I reported it. It was probably a couple dozen names that they reported, or at least, yeah, it was about a couple, close to a couple, about 20 to 20, between 20 and 25, and a chunk of them got suspended. And so, again, outside and away from the WWE, this is the same thing. This is, you know, this is something away from the WWE, and this even has. And this is even from a wider stance, from a PR standpoint, because this whole Signature Pharmacy was, I mean, that wasn't, they found that out, and there was a list of names. It wasn't like a public thing. They suspended a list of people because of names that were, you know, because of people who prescribed. This is a huge thing. This is UFC, you know, a company as, you know, bigger than the WWE. And, you know, even with that, it just seems like they're kind of grasping for straws to try to have that marquee name. And Brock Lesnar is the marquee name. He's the crossover name that, you know, is a marketing, you know, gold mine for the WWE. So because of that, you know, they're not going to, you know, reprimand him. I think it's unfair. Even if it's a fine, you know, I think that's that would create some type of fairness to this whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, they could probably send out a press release and say we find Brock Lesnar $50,000 or whatever, and
yeah,
$50,000 is a drop in a bucket.
yeah, but even if it's nothing, you know, even if it's $50,000, which is, you know, a couple of blinks for him, you know, it's still something. It's still, from a PR standpoint, you know, to like I said, it's a morale booster, you know, on the WWE locker rooms, and like, man, you know, they're not doing anything, you know, with Brock Lesnar. He's a part timer. He comes in, he makes all this money, you know, and he was gone for 7 years, and you know, he still has the opportunity to, you know, to get all this favoritism. So, you know, hopefully something's done, you know, from this instead of just absolutely nothing. I just think that's unfair. All right, so Teddy Long says that Shelton Benjamin and MVP are returning to WWE. MVP denies reports I kind of denies the reports. But as we saw on SmackDown, Shelton Benjamin's in. He's locked in. Haven't heard anything from MVP, but he was right. And at least one of his he was on the Gerwig report. I actually talked to Steve Gerwig a few weeks ago, and he was right. He said he had a conversation with them, and they revealed to him that they're in. I probably wasn't supposed to say that, but you know when you're in the public arena like that, and you're podcasting, and it's, you know, has the opportunity to be, you know, widespread and just delivered to thousands upon thousands of people, you're going to have people talking about a subject like that, and that's definitely a buzzworthy topic. So, you know, he probably slipped it out, but it came out and spoiled it for Benjamin in a way. You know, and so here's my question. Since we know that Benjamin's in, what role does he have in the WWE? And then is MVP even worth trying to obtain?
I mean, for roster depth, right? I think, like, Benjamin is, I believe, 41 years old right now, and MVP might be 43, 44, something like that. So they're at a point in their careers where, you know, they don't have that many years left as active wrestlers. But I think if you're in their position, it's better to be in WWE than work somewhere else at this point, because you can get that exposure on national television and worldwide television, and, you know, maybe they get agent jobs after or whatever. And, you know, the roles on the current programs right now, I think, would be just to provide roster depth. Like, if you saw that better role tonight on SmackDown, it was like there wasn't that many people in the ring. Like, there's only like 20 guys on the roster right now, so 25 or something like that. So it's, you add bodies. That's just what it is. I mean, they had Rhino and Shelton Benjamin's coming back, and they're both in their 40s. And MVP, you know, I think with MVP, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, the fact that he kind of mentioned it before and then he denied it, I think the company tells people to deny it until it's official, right? So,
right. Yeah.
I remember talking with Kevin Steen in person when he after his trial with WWE, and I was kind of just like, you know, trying to get information but not share it online kind of thing. And he was just kind of, you know, kind of a wink or whatever, like, yeah, I'll be in the ring soon or whatever, that kind of thing. So that was like 6 months later to, of course, the NXT debut, because in a lot of cases there's time and things like that. So I think maybe people will come in, but I don't know whether it'll be Raw or SmackDown or whatever. But you could team up with Benjamin. I think they need tag team depth, so that would be a pretty good team right there.
Yeah. I mean, he teamed with Benjamin in Japan, and I just don't see much going on with that decision. I totally agree with you when you said roster depth. That's the only thing, because I don't see him as any type of top tier upper mid card guy at all.
No.
Definitely won't be in the main event on SmackDown. You know, American Alpha's there, so possibly some type of affiliation with them. But the first thing that I can imagine is probably him, you know, jobbing out to Baron Corbin or something like that.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think that's probably the first thing that's on the task for Shelton Benjamin, is to put over Corbin. But, you know, that's probably what he's going to do and what he's going to be. I just don't see him. I mean, you know, he was doing good in Japan, you know, when he's with the Suzuki Gun, and, you know, he was popular. He was very popular in Japan, but I suppose that, you know, here's the thing, you know, and I've talked to, you know, I've interviewed many, many wrestlers on my show, and a ton of them, you know, did work in Japan. And the running theme is, I liked it. It was fun, but I miss home. I miss my family. I miss home.
Exactly.
So I'm sure that that's most likely where he's at too. You know, he misses home, and he misses, you know, just staying in the States. And so I understand that. You know, I get it. And I'm sure the WWE is probably offering something, you know, compared, a pretty good comparison to, you know, how Japan was paying him. So I get it. I get it from that stance. I just think that he would have been a very much better name for NXT from a main event standpoint, especially if Triple H is trying to rebrand and make them a standalone brand. I think that he would have got – I think it would have been a better selection for NXT.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yep, absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Battleground takeaways. John, what are your takeaways for Battleground?
Great show. I enjoyed the main event. It was amazing. I thought as good as Owen Zane. I think Zane Owens is the best. The main event, just the fact that Dean Ambrose won, I was kind of surprised because I thought Rollins was going to win. I don't know who you picked. I thought Rollins was going to take the move as Raw, but the fact that Ambrose won is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It was an above average show for me. I think it was a solid card. I didn't, you know, for a Battleground, I think it was pretty good. Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. Breezango's grown on me, match after match. I think that Bailey being a one time thing doesn't make any sense to me. Because there's nothing else for her to do on NXT. I mean, chasing the title again to win it for the second time against, you know, here's the thing: make Asuka the person, make Asuka the top person for NXT, the top woman for NXT. You know, Bailey had a run that was very long. So I would do that. I mean, you have some upstarts. I would bring up, you know, I would bring some indie people. You have Santana. What's her name?
Garrett.
What's her name?
Santana Garrett.
Yeah, Santana Garrett. Yeah. I was about to say Tessa Blanchard. So you have. I mean, you know, you had Britt Baker, you know, job out on Raw, but I think that if you put her on SmackDown, she's, you know, she's popular in the indies. So, you know, you have enough talent, you have enough, you know, options. You know, I'd bring Chelsea back, you know, from Tough Enough. And, you know, they're doing Mandy Rose more of a total divas. But yeah, you have people chomping at the bits of developmental, you know, wanting to get that spot. So you have, you know, you can build the women's division from the ground up. I would do that, but I would also have, you know, some notable names as well. But I'd make Asuka the person. I think that Bayley's overstayed her welcome in NXT. And I think that doing a one-time thing wasn't a very good idea. Wyatt Family and New Day, I really liked that story. I think it was one of the only weekly segments that actually told a good story when they had the swamp match and, you know, Xavier Woods being scared and finally kind of facing his fears. But the thing is, it was just weird to me that they made this storyline, he faced his fears, and within, you know, 20 seconds, you know, he got Sister Abigail and it was done.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It was just weird.
I like that Bray got the win because Bray hasn't been booked well for like 6 months or more. So I was encouraged by that. I thought he was going to win on SmackDown tonight. That didn't happen. So I was like, okay, what are they doing with Bray now? I don't know. So there's all these questions. What's Bray going to do? I mean, Bray wins that, and then you can have a main event against Ambrose kind of thing, like on SmackDown, right? It makes sense, but I don't know what they're doing. I think New Day losing is not a big deal because they're tag champs. And we saw what they did on Raw. I think that's going to be good for them to face Gallows and Anderson. So no one lost for me. Like you said, it was a good story and a fun match.
Yeah, it was a fun match. It was a good story. I don't know. I just think it would have been better if Rowan would have taken the fall.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just because they're pushing Strowman. Of course, you know, Bray Wyatt is still going to have that, you know, strong presence. But, you know, Eric Rowan is, he's talking about Mr. Irrelevant, you know, Curtis Axel. You know, Eric Rowan should don that name as well, Mr. Irrelevant number two, because he just can't really find his niche, you know, and if they're going to push him as a singles person again, that, oh, man. I mean, the first one was a disaster, and this one's not going to be much better.
He needs Luke Harper back fast.
I agree. And yeah, maybe they'll do something like that with the Wyatts kind of rejoining with Harper going to SmackDown, and I'll be okay with that. But Eric Rowan needs Bray Wyatt. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So Battleground was okay overall. They're really sticking at the Roman Reigns though, and that's going to transition us over to Raw. They're really sticking to Roman Reigns.
Can I talk about Zayn Owens for a second? Just cause,
absolutely. Oh yeah, that match was amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was like the one of the matches of the year, I thought. And for people that don't know me, I'm a Canadian, so when I see Zayn Owens, they're from Montreal area, Toronto area, but it's like when, I don't know, you know how us Canadians are. Like when we see Canadian wrestlers, they're one of us, right? Like we take so much pride in them.
Oh, yeah.
So when I see these. They remind me of like Edge and Christian, the way that they kind of grew up in the business together. They're best friends, legitimately, and all this kind of stuff. But Edge and Christian didn't feud that long, and these two have already feuded a lot, so it's been kind of fun. And this match I thought was exceptional, like the way that they just went back and forth, and I mean, they were hitting physical moves. And did you see that spot when Zayn did the moonsault and they landed on the shoulder? I was scared. That might have been a plant spot. I don't even know, like, to be honest. Like, it could have been. I don't think it was, but it could have been. And and the other thing is, this was Zayn's first pay-per-view win. You know that? Like, he hasn't won a pay-per-view since debut in January. So I think it was pretty significant. I think they announced it should have put it on as a bigger deal. But they kind of put it on as a big deal, but not big enough. But yeah. I mean, that was one of the best matches of the year. I think Zayn Nakamura is still number one, but this one's probably the top three.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about that, whether it's Nakamura, Zayn, or Zayn Owens. And I'm a big Nakamura fan. He's terrible. But it's, I may edge this one over Nakamura and Zayn. Because the back and forth between and the emotion that was with Zayn and Nakamura was incredible, but I'm old school, man. I'm about psychology, and it told a story. I was so tired of looking at a Zayn Owens match. It just seemed like they fought every week. I think that the build was horrible because I'm a big fan of not a lot of physicality until. You know the match.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just the money is in. You know the video promos. You know and the packages and you know the teases and all that. That's where the anticipation comes. The money is in. You know the physicality comes. You know in the match, the pay per view, that big moment, and they just overdid that. I wasn't a big fan of that at all. But the story that they told. You know, in the match was awesome, especially when he hit the Haluva kick, and then you know he kind of
holds him up,
picked him up, yeah, exactly, and then he hit it again. You know, this the emotion. You know, the last time I saw that type of emotion was Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. You know, during their match. You know, and I think that was I love that type of emotion in the match. So it was really cool. What are your raw takeaways?
I thought it was an above average show. I think I give a score on every pay-per-view, and I think I gave it like an 8 out of 10. I think it tied Money in the Bank as my second favorite this year, so as my top two, like Money in the Bank and this one. Because to me, when you have three or four matches that are at a high level, like I thought the sixth man with Cena was really good too. And it's just solid, good booking. Like I think people complain about the little things so much, but when you look at the pay-per-views, the matches usually get time. they're going 3 hours and 20 minutes on these kind of shows now. Kind of drags sometimes, but I mean, you're going to get 15, 20 minutes for high profile matches. And like you said, it's about having the match. It's like back in the day when we're paying $30 or $40 for a pay-per-view. It's like now we're getting a lot cheaper, but which is good for us. But you know, it's like they're delivering on the pay-per-views. Like that's what they're building for, and I think they're doing a good job on those.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what are your Raw takeaways?
Well, I think it's a unique show because of the roster split. Like, it was very, you know, this is the last time Cena's going to team with these two. This is the last time AJ's going to. So there was a lot of that. And it was kind of weird storylines in some senses. But my overall takeaway is, I mean, the quality of work was there. And I'm optimistic about the future of this roster. I mean, once guys like Finn Balor and Samoa Joe and Nakamura on these pay-per-views, like, the work's going to be even better, right? So we're going to be spoiled as hell by these pay-per-views.
Yeah, with Finn Balor, you know, a lot of people might get upset with me, but here's the thing: he's one of my favorite wrestlers without question. But here's the thing: you have to make sure that someone doesn't peak too soon. And, you know, I remember that with Sheamus, you know, back in the few years back. And, you know, it was one of those things that he – are you back on? It looks like you're back on, John. Let's see how your audio is.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. All right. So, you know, with and I was talking about with Finn Balor, and you were talking about Above Average Show. Here's my thing. People may not like this, and I said this on my face. I have a Raw review on my Crave Wrestling Facebook page every Monday night after Raw. I'm a huge Finn Balor guy fan. He's one of my top five. I love his character. I'm a big fan of characters. Love Finn Balor. Following him when he was Devitt in Japan. But here's the thing. I had a problem with Raw. I had a problem with his quest on Raw because the creative cannot assume and they cannot book as if people know who he is. And yeah. I think the problem lies in where, you know, the WWE is booking to such a small niche market of, you know, say, you know, you have 1.5 million people who are watching, who are subscribers of the WWE network. You have about double that to, you know, that watches Raw, who from a rating standpoint, about 3 million, 3.5 million. So you're saying, so basically half of the people who see Finn Balor out on Mondays don't know who he is or are vaguely unfamiliar or vaguely familiar of who he is. I think that it's unfair for Finn Balor, especially someone of his character. I think it's unfair to just kind of thrust him into that spot without properly building him. That's just my opinion on that because I, you know, putting him in a title match, a world title match or a universal title match, horrible name by the way, a universal title match for the WWE. But yeah, it's, you know, you can't, to me, and this is my opinion, you can't do that for someone who you want to be the future of your company. And I think that Finn Balor has everything. You know, he has the tools, he has the character down packed. Of course, the wrestling ability speaks for itself, but you can't peak someone too fast. You did that with Sheamus a few years back, and Sheamus hasn't been the same since. I mean, he won the world title too. He won the title 2 months after he debuted on the main roster. 2 months. And they peaked him way too soon, and he hasn't rebounded since. And that was, what, to 10 or 11? 2009. Yeah, so that was 7 years ago. You know, nearly 7 years ago. It was TLC. Yeah, TLC of that year. And so you're approaching 7 years ago, and he hasn't rebounded since as far as being a top guy. I mean, he's had some, you know, world title, you know, reigns, and he's had some decent feuds. But, you know, especially when it comes as a babyface, you have to prepare a babyface. You have to – the chase, the money's in the chase. Make him chase, make him chase. Who's the foe? Who's the big foe that he's going to – people are going to rally with him behind. And Finn Balor has, you know, he has the paint, he has the entrance. It's so mega star like. And if you put him a month after his roster debut in a title match, to me, as a fan, I don't think it's a good idea. I'd rather for him to be built up to be that character, to be that mega star, instead of WWE just say, okay, we'll just. You know, and it's one of those things that, to me, I think Vince McMahon books people like Finn Balor from a size standpoint. He's like, you know what, we're gonna alley-oop you this, and it's a very tough alley-oop. We hope you slam dunk it, but if you don't slam dunk it, don't blame my bad alley-oop. That's basically how I feel about it.
I see everything that you're saying, but I think it's a case of they know that the product was a bit stale with Roman at the top, and because of Roman's, I think, like I was telling people, I said, if Roman didn't get suspended, there's no way he's getting pinned at Money in the Bank, at Battleground, and on Raw. Like, he's getting punished for, you know, 30 days, and that's fine. I totally get it, but, like, there's no way Finn beats him clean on Raw if Roman doesn't have a suspension, right?
Right.
You agree on that?
I agree.
So it's like I think your point is valid in the sense that they need to do more with them. I would have had him talk for like 2 minutes, like just kind of, you know, I'm Finn Balor. I'm here to do this. I busted my butt in Japan for whatever 10 years. I came to WWE and I conquered NXT. I won the NXT title. I became the most popular name there. Just talk a little on the card. I know that's not his strong suit, though. Like, his promos aren't that great necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, at least it gives people something to like about him or whatever. And, I mean, they did there like a quick video package, but it wasn't that much. So I think what you're saying was valid. But at the same time, it's like they needed something fresh, and I think it's good that they did something fresh. And, you know, he's considered new. Even though he's 35 years old, and like you said, you follow him for 15 years, probably. And I followed him a bit in Japan, too. And it's just like, he's not new to us necessarily, but like you said, though, to the people watching at home, he is new. And and the thing with the 1.5 million network subscribers, I guarantee you, like, maybe a third of them watch NXT. Like, how many people watch NXT? We don't really know it. So, a lot of those people that have the network are only watching the current pay per views. Or
exactly.
The older ones or whatever. They're not watching NXT every week. So,
exactly.
It's not for like us and people like us, but I think his response was good. Though the crowd believes him, and the fact that he's 190 pounds helps because he's an underdog, so that helps.
I think you made some real good points there. And here's the thing. I mean, the crowd was behind him initially, and I was very observant to how they booked Finn Balor. The main event match, people already had a Finn Balor overkill because I observed, you know, the reaction towards his second entrance, and it was just like a mid-card match. It was a mid-card response, you know, as far as they had the second go around. I'm like, oh man, you know, not already. That's the reason why, you know, the whole too much too soon came to my head, and, you know, are they peaking him too quickly? And you also made a very good point as far as the subscribers for the WWE Network. There's around a million and a half subscribers, but not the entire million and a half people watch NXT. So that even lowers the number. you know, as far as, you know, people who are weekly watch NXT. And here's the thing, and I do like the fact that they don't have, you know, certain big names on there every week. It kind of brings an old school feel to it. Like, you know, Hogan wouldn't be on, you know, shows every week because it enhances his character if he's not there or every week. That they do that. They do that with Finn Balor. They do that with Shinsuke Nakamura. They do that with Samoa Joe. I like that a lot. The detriment to that, you know, from a WWE Network NXT, you know, new viewer standpoint, is wonder if I'm a casual NXT viewer on the WWE Network, and it's, you know, I watch a week. This week, Finn Balor is not on there. They don't even mention him. And then I watch it a month later, and he's not on there again. You know, and then all of a sudden he appears on Raw, and I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. You know what I mean? So, you know, and so that's the dilemma to me. I think that Finn Balor's character is so amazing, and he deserves to be built better. I strongly feel that way. So, yeah, and I think that Nia Jax is good. I like the squash match with Nia Jax. Braun Strowman, I still don't see much going on with him, but I like how they interviewed James Ellsworth. I think that was hilarious. Yeah, I was a big fan of that. If you're going to have squash matches, at least, you know, do stuff like that. I think that was very funny.
The women's match was excellent. I thought Sasha and Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
It was treated like a big deal. Like, they hyped it up. They announced it at the start of the show. Like, if they announced it before the show, I think that would have been better. But a lot of people expected this at SummerSlam, right? Because I wrestled with Charlotte, retained the title, and I was like, well, Sasha was off television for like 3-4 months, and they're saving it for SummerSlam. And I get why they did it here instead, but do you think that's a bad thing that they didn't save it until SummerSlam?
I do. Only because of this, and I said this on my review, only because this is Sasha Banks' first reign. They should have waited to SummerSlam. I think it should have been a screwy finish. I think that the Charlotte should have walked out of the match. I mean, you could have had all of the amazingness that
comes back out again after getting kicked out or something. You could do that too.
Exactly, and they could have had the match was incredible. It was great. It was long. It was energetic. It was emotional. Had all the components of an amazing match. But I think it would have had so much more heat on Charlotte leading into SummerSlam if she would have just rolled out, you know, and, you know, if Dana Brooke would have came back out after she was ejected and would have pulled Charlotte out, they could have ran back. Just imagine so much heat that would have been on her because of that. And the more heat you get as a heel, the better you put over the babyface. And I think that was the missing component of this. I understand they needed to create the shock value, the first one, you know, from the split, the new era. I get it. I get why they did it. I totally get why they did it. The only problem I have with that is it's Sasha's first title run, and I think it kind of diminishes the feel of it. Of the first run, especially when Sasha's the person, she's going to be the face of the women's division from at least a babyface point of view, and I think it just kind of diminishes, you know, the moment a bit because it was this one instead of SummerSlam.
So the crowd at SummerSlam would be a lot more into it too. Like the Pittsburgh crowd is pretty solid. I'm not going to criticize them too bad, but at SummerSlam, it would have been a huge moment, right? So, SummerSlam, we remember SummerSlam stuff like we remember WrestleMania stuff. Like, you know, it's more of a thing that is going to last forever. With this, I'm going to forget the date that she won the title this time. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas if it was SummerSlam, I would remember it. So, like, I remember her and Bayley last year on SummerSlam weekend had that memorable match. And so that's why I remember it, because that's what it was. It was like, but I get why they do it. New era, new champion, and like you said, the match was great. I like the risks. Like Banks did the suicide dive. She almost broke her neck, though. I was kind of worried there. When you're like 110 pounds like her, you probably shouldn't be doing those moves sometimes. And then Charlotte does a moonsault outside the ring on the floor. I'm just like, that's crazy too. But,
yeah.
You know, she's a good athlete, but it's like, you don't have to do that stuff.
No, you don't have to.
That's
yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you as far as the SummerSlam. SummerSlam is once a year, so you can say SummerSlam 2016. Raw is every week, so it's just one Raw out of 52. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all the Raws are just kind of compiled into one bunch. It's one of those Raws that she won the woman's title. You know, it was one Raw in July. I don't remember the date. You know, when you think of it from, you know, a reminiscent standpoint, years from now, oh yeah, one of those Raws, that Raw after the split, I don't remember, it was in July sometime, you know, as opposed to SummerSlam 2016 Brooklyn, you know what I mean? And I think that there's a backstory too when it comes to Brooklyn. You know, she lost the NXT title in Brooklyn, you know what I mean? It could be more of a redemptive story, you know what I mean, that could have came from that. So I think it's one of those things that I've noticed throughout the years that WWE creative have much of a knee-jerk booking style nowadays, which I think is harmful in many cases, because it doesn't really stretch out characters. It doesn't really develop people properly. It doesn't really develop storylines properly and enough for people to be fully engaged in it. So. Real quick, what is your what are your takeaways from tonight's SmackDown or last night's SmackDown?
It was kind of, you know how like on Raw they kind of tried to have a new feel to it, and SmackDown it was just the set was very like plain. They didn't have a stage, they didn't have anything by the staging area. There's no ramp on SmackDown, which is fine. It's basically the same set that they have on pay per views where they just cover the fireworks on the sides and. There's really nothing to it. And then they used a different camera angle. I don't know if you noticed it. It was from like the NXT show in like 2010, 2011. It's like that camera right above the ring kind of thing. Some people were complaining about it. I saw on Twitter and stuff, but you know, I don't mind it. Like I'll get used to it, but they kind of went through it too often, I thought. So they'll probably cut down on it. They'll probably see what the feedback is and stuff like that. And then, it was really a one-match show. Like, I like Natalya and Becky's match. I thought this match was better than the Battleground match. Both of them were pretty solid. It was like, Natty wins the one, Becky wins the other. And then the main event was, like, it was a six-pack challenge, and I thought Bray Wyatt was going to win for sure because I'm like, okay, Dean Ambrose in the main event for the WWE title. Maybe not the main event. I think Lesnar match might go main event, but... it's like Ziggler ends up winning, and I'm just like, I was happy for him, but at the same time, they built Ziggler, like you could say in the whole show, man, the storylines are so big, and it's like Ziggler's been a loser for how many years now? Like he lost the Baron Corbin like five times, and now he's winning in one more contender match.
Yeah.
So, just weird.
Very, very good point, man. I agree. He's been irrelevant for so long. I was happy from a fan because I've been indifferent toward Dolph Ziggler for quite some time now.
Yeah,
you know, a few years ago, the beginning of his babyface run, and the whole Alberto Del Rio, you know, when he cashed it in and then became face not too long after that. I think that they could have. I mean, the concussion hurt him, but it's just they could have really ran with that as far as him being a top babyface. The fans have always been, you know, behind him most of the time. But you know, it's for SmackDown. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I think that Dolph Ziggler can be groomed as one of the top baby faces for SmackDown. I think Cena's, you know, kind of going in. I think Cena's in that upper mid card role that he's not such an asset to the company that he can, you know, he cannot be there for a week and he won't be missed. I think that they're kind of doing that now with the whole ESPYs thing. He wasn't there. You know, there was another date that he wasn't there. But he wasn't such a prominent role in the show that it was like, oh, man, Cena's gone. So I think that's where he is now, and that's cool. You know, he's paid his dues. He's been there for 14 years. So, you know, it's cool. I'm fine with that. I think that's actually a good idea. Dolph Ziggler still got some time left in him. He's got a good 5 years left in him. you know, he's 36. He's, you know, in wrestling years, that's a bit up there. But at the same time, you know, he's still got a few years left in him. He's got a fresh win. He has the opportunity at 36 to have a fresh win, and I think that's good for him to give us, you know, a good few years left. And I think that that's good to make him a face of SmackDown, at least for the next few years, one of the faces of SmackDown. So I was pleasantly surprised at that decision to make him. I wasn't opposed to it just because I think that is a good fresh win for SmackDown to make him. I think that Dolph Ziggler, if booked correctly, I think he has more star power than Dean Ambrose because he looks like a champion. He looks like a star as opposed to Ambrose, if that makes sense.
You can say with Ziggler and Balor, they got two number one contenders that are like 200-pound guys. Like, they're not that big, so it's kind of cool that they're kind of expanding the horizons a bit. The one thing I think the way it's going to be is Ziggler's just a guy for like Ambrose to beat until they get put him against AJ Styles because they want to do Styles against Cena, and then Styles will face Ambrose after that, and then I think Styles will win the title from Ambrose at some point in the fall.
I can definitely see that. Styles was actually my pick to win. I didn't necessarily want him to win per se, but I thought it was going to be Ambrose Styles, just because
I
don't think he
held it.
Time after time they've tried so many things with Wyatt, and he's reached the glass ceiling each and every time. I didn't think this time would have been anything different, and it wasn't. You know, I don't know exactly what they're going to do with him, but it didn't. He's not in the world title picture, so I don't know what's next. A couple other takeaways before we get to the Fiddler Week. The woman segment was weird. Eva Marie is just horrible, and for some reason they just continue to make her like a goddess. It was just horrible. Miz TV was weird because why are you going to have Randy Orton wrestle against the Intercontinental Champion? One, that dilutes the prestige of the Intercontinental title, which they should not do. And two, it would have been better if they would just held off for Orton, you know, to wrestle and come back against Lesnar. That just didn't make any sense to me. I like the fact that they had Apollo Crews win the Battle Royal and be the main event. I think that was a good way to make him relevant. But it was one of those things that in the very beginning I tweeted, you know, it's a fresh look. I liked it. But toward the end of the show, by the end of the show, it still felt like B SmackDown to me.
I was optimistic that it was going to be like memorable and good. Like, I thought Raw was excellent, and I thought SmackDown was very average. So it just didn't live up to the expectations. The event was good. And their finishers, and then Ziggler kind of winning was a surprise, because he never usually wins at the super kick too. So it's like the fact that he won with the super kick is noteworthy also. And you know, super kicks are done in every match it seems these days. But poor H3K, everyone's doing his move everywhere because they all grew up watching him probably.
poor gentleman Chris Adams. Let's even go further back.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, real quick, we got 5 minutes for Flavor of the Week.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, real quick, we got a few minutes left. Without much explanation, we don't have much time for explanation, but just a quick, you know, 5-second explanation after each match. John and I picked the we're doing a series right now leading into SummerSlam where for 5 years, we pick, for 6 years, we pick our favorite match with each of my guest co-hosts, for most of my guest co-hosts. And these years are 1994 to 1999. So let's start off with 94. What was your favorite match in 94?
That's an easy one. It's got to be Brett versus Owen in the steel cage. Nothing else is even close, really.
I totally agree. Yeah, that was my favorite 94, the steel cage match. 95.
Ladder match too, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. I mean, I don't know if people remember, it was originally going to be Shawn and Sid, and then they just kind of realized the card sucked, and they just kind of put Shawn Razor 2 on it. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree. That was my pick too, Shawn Razor 2. the ladder match. It was just as good as the first one to me. 96.
Yeah. There's two that I like. The Sean Vader and then Mankind Undertaker, which is more than a goal, but I'm going to go Sean Vader. The only thing was I just didn't like that the finishes. I know there was some backstage politics with HBK not wanting to come over and stuff, but I love Vader, so it was a good match.
And for all the listeners who are listening live and will listen on iTunes and other various media outlets, I just gave John the subject of the Flavor of the Week this week. I discussed nothing else with him, but funny enough, those were my two picks, the Boiler Room Brawl and Vader, but I wrote down Michaels versus Vader had the edge. I think they both were almost half an hour. But just the emotion that was with Michaels and Vader, just that whole David and Goliath feel to it. I always love those type of matches, and that's the reason why I had the edge. 97.
And you just mentioned the time of those matches, and I'm like, I'm looking at 97, and it's like Brett and Undertaker match was like 30 minutes. Everything else was like, you know, less than 10, and then Austin Owen was like 15. So it's like, okay, one match gets way more time. It's going to be better usually. It's just what it is. So. The Mankind match was pretty good, actually, but I'm going to go Brett Undertaker with Shawn Michaels as the ref. It's the whole steel chair shot that set off DX and everything like that later.
Yeah. For me, it was Steve Austin versus Owen Hart, just because of that, you know, a feud. The feud was awesome for a mid-card feud. We need an Intercontinental title feud like that, you know, 20 years later. We need for the prestige of the Intercontinental title to be like that. And of course,
the pile driver story in that match was painful for Austin.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was very memorable.
Career.
Yep. Yeah. 98.
Probably Austin Undertaker in the main event, the Highway to Hell theme. It wasn't a great card necessarily, but it was one of those things. Oh no, sorry, the ladder match. I forgot about the ladder match. Triple H Rock ladder match is definitely the best match.
Yep, that was mine. Very awesome emotion in that match. 99, a very weak SummerSlam.
Yeah. most of the 99 pay-per-views is like when it was kind of Vince Russo's writing peak, I guess you could say. The matches didn't matter as much. It seemed like, I think Test and Shane McMahon is my favorite match in that show, the street fight. It was a lot of fun.
And ladies and gentlemen, I have written on my piece of paper for 99, Tess versus Shane McMahon. Yeah, the love her or leave her match. Yeah, very interesting. All right, John, plug away, man.
All right, my work's at tjwrestling.net. You can follow me on Twitter at John Report. Pretty active on there. I write about every show on WWE television, edit, all that kind of stuff. I write to comeback.com also. Couple other sites, but that's enough for now.
Fantastic. Awesome, John. I've had fun sharing the hosting privileges with you, and hopefully we'll have you on the show soon again.
I appreciate you asking me, and I'm sorry about the audio delay at one point, but we got through it.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Take care.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was John Canton from TJR Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. 226 episodes in the books. Until next week, enjoy Eureka Wrestling. God bless. Chris Featherstone and Crave Wrestling for Pancakes and Power Slams 226 signing off. God bless. Goodbye.